ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 6, text 43. That's the one written on the board? Yeah. Tatra tang buddhi sangyogam. Labhate Pauravadehikam Yatate Chatato Bhuya Sangsidhau Kurunandana Tatratang Buddhi Sangyogam Labhate Pauravadehikam Yatate chattato bhuya Sangsidhau kurunandana Tatratang buddhi sangyogam Labhate paurvadehikam Yatate chattato bhuya Sangsidhau Kurunandana. This is a verse in the section of Bhagavad Gita in which Sri Krishna teaches Arjuna about the fate of the fallen yogi, one who does not complete the course of yoga in one lifetime. So I'll go back afterward to recap that. So the translation of this verse is, on taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success. O son of Kuru. Purport, King Bharata, who took his third birth in the family of a good Brahmana, is an example of good birth for the revival of previous transcendental consciousness. King Bharata was the emperor of the world, and since his time, this planet has been known among the demigods as Bharatavarsha. Formerly, it was known as Ilavritavarsha. The emperor at an early age retired for spiritual perfection but failed to achieve success. In his next life, he took birth in the family of a good Brahmana and was known as Jarabharat because he always remained secluded and did not talk to anyone. And later on, he was discovered as the greatest transcendentalist by King Ruhugana. From his life, it is understood that transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. Tatratang buddhi sangyogang labhate pauravadehikam yatate chatato bhuya sangsidhau kurunandana. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. Yeah, this is a series of verses, one in a series of verses. Krishna described the yoga system to Arjuna, the meditative yoga system, which Arjuna thought was very difficult. very difficult to practice. And Arjuna expressed a doubt about someone who takes that up but is not successful in that. What happens? He gave up his material prospects to take to spiritual life, but he couldn't make it in spiritual life. He was too tough. Couldn't make it through. So, I'll just read the few verses in which Krishna replies to that, including the verse we're reading today. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Partha Naivehanamutra Vinashas Tasya Vidyate Nahi Kalyana Kaschid Durgatin Tata Gachati. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, son of Pritha, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction in this world, this is verse 40, or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. Tata, Srila Prabhupada has translated as my friend. It's an endearing term. Then a verse which is quite well known among the verses in the Gita. Prapya punya kritang lokan ushitva shashvati samaha shuchinam shrimatange he yoga bhashto bhijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. So what happens? Someone who's unsuccessful in yoga practice, he goes to the heavenly planets. Unsuccessful means he came down to the platform of material enjoyment, or he hadn't fully transcended the platform of desire for material enjoyment. So he goes to the heavenly planets, which means when you go there, you go for a long time. There's no holidays to Swargaloka. People take a holiday, they get 2 weeks off and they go somewhere, and they come back. They go somewhere, they think it's going to be Swarga. It's not Swarga, and they come back. So those who do go to Swarga Loka, they enjoy for a long time. There is a description in Shastra that it's a place of enjoyment, but not much more maybe. And then they come back to this earth planet, or this earthly sphere. Yeah, Bhumi, that's it, Karma Bhumi. Where what we do here, that in the human form, that will settle up our future for a long time. Because in the human form, especially on this earthly sphere, what we do, we accrue reactions for doing so. So what it will be our future in the next life, that depends on our actions in this life and on the consciousness that we cultivate, either deliberately or just it happens. The cultivation of a certain type of consciousness that is particularly the endeavor of the yogis. They're trying to cultivate a consciousness that will elevate them from the material platform. And others who are not very thoughtful, they just go through life, and whatever kind of association they get, their consciousness is determined by that, which is not very intelligent. The intelligent person, Atato Brahma Jignasa, he thinks. What is the purpose of life, the meaning of life? What is the... Well, specifically, Brahma means that which is supreme. What is the nature of the supreme? That question is asked by a very intelligent person. And according to the answer that they find, they mold their life for the sake of understanding what is Brahma, for Brahmagyan, transcendental knowledge. And most people, they just, whatever everyone else is doing around them, they just follow. which in the modern age means you go to school, you get a job, you work and you die, and in the previous age meant that's described previously for the persons who are attached to the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, they will perform activities so that they can be elevated to the heavenly planets for sensual enjoyment. So they go to the heavenly planets, and the fallen yogi also goes, but when they come back with a different kind of consciousness. When they come back to this earthly sphere, then those who are interested in material enjoyment, they go on being interested in material enjoyment. And those who are born into a situation which is of more elevated consciousness, they might for some time be interested in material enjoyment. This that's discussed here, that they will revive the consciousness of their previous life, but it may not be immediately. This Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe, that's described by the Acharyas as they are the yogi who is unsuccessful, but he's made a good attempt. He's tried to come out of this world of birth and death. So he comes back in a family of brahmanas or a family of vaishyas, it's described here, not kshatriyas. Arjuna was in a kshatriya family, but the family of Shuchi means brahmana. So in the Chaturvarga, the four goals of life, dharma, artha, kama and moksha, those who are really brahmanas, they will be interested in dharma and moksha, and not very much, if at all, in artha and kama. Although it's difficult for the brahmanas not to be interested in ladus. The saying is there, brahmana mudaka priyaha. So they have to overcome those desires. And nowadays it's brahmana coffee priyaha. Here in South India, they're very interested in coffee. I didn't know. But it's not such a bad thing, but at the same time, you can't get moksha if you have to stop at the coffee stall on the way out. You might get stuck there. The brahmanas, they're interested in dharma and moksha, and kshatriyas, they have a very different kind of consciousness, actually. Bhakti Raghav Maharaj yesterday was speaking about the Kautilya Arthashastra. That's actually for brahmanas who are, they will study that to guide the kshatriyas, and their interest. Kshatriyas are also very interested in dharma, as we see Arjuna here in Bhagavad Gita. He was very concerned about dharma. But they're also interested in artha, that they have to. Their dharma is not moksha dharma. Their dharma is artha. They have to be interested in property and and land and all these things. Because that's the duty of a kshatriya. They take a different role in society. And they're interested in karma and not very interested in moksha. That's for the brahmanas. And vaishyas also, they're very much interested in dharma, artha. For them, artha is the main thing. Gain. And for the kshatriya also artha, but they don't produce anything. The vaishyas, they are producing. And they're also interested in karma. But it's all regulated by dharma. And that's for the kshudras, they're interested in karma, sense enjoyment. And they're also interested in artha, but not in the same way that the kshatriyas and the vaishyas are interested, because they don't get much of it. And it's not their duty to generate it, as with the Vaishyas, or to regulate it, the Kshatriyas, they regulate artha and they collect it and they distribute it as required. But the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, they're interested in artha for the sake of dharma, but the Shudras, they're only interested in artha for the sake of karma. But the difference between a Shudra and the lower than a Shudra is that they do have a sense of dharma also. So they're not completely out with the Chandalas and others. So the Kshatriyas also, they may be, we see there are many cases, the instance here is given of Bharat Maharaj in this purport. So it's common that at some point they will leave the life of a king and adopt a life which is very similar to that of the brahmanas, of the renounced brahmanas, of total renunciation, severe renunciation, for the sake of moksha. So while they're acting as a kshatriya, then their focus is not on moksha, but they may come up to that at some point. So the fallen yogi is born in a family of brahmanas, and there may be different kinds of brahmanas also. Some of them are interested in money and all these things, but they're not very good brahmanas. The real brahmana is not interested in material enjoyment, but he follows dharma very strictly, and he's interested in spiritual knowledge. That's the shastric knowledge and ultimately spiritual knowledge. So the yogis who are doing better, they are, but still they didn't achieve perfection in one life, or they fell from that position. They're born in a brahmana family. We're here talking about when the Varnashram system was actually functioning, as it was to a large extent when Krishna spoke this. We're not talking about someone who's in the modern age is considered a brahmana due to their surname and not much else. Or Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, whatever. And one who is less developed, he may take birth in a Vaishya family. He's also very pious. The Brahmanas and the Vaishyas, they tend to be at least vegetarian. Not all Brahmanas are vegetarian by culture, but most of them are. Whereas Kshatriyas and Shudras, they tend to be meat eaters. So there's that piety there, and they're born in such and such a family. And then, atava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etadhi durlabhataram loke janma yad idrisham. And here Srila Prabhupada has put this in brackets, or the editors at least have put it in brackets, or if unsuccessful after a long practice of yoga. That means he's very elevated in yoga, but still somehow he fell down from that position or was not successful in his practice. He takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. It's rare in this world because transcendentalists are rare, and mostly they're not married also. So a family of yogis, it's not so many. Those who are really very serious about spiritual life, the number of brahmanas in society is few, but most of them are not transcendentalists. There may be some, especially they're mostly involved in they may be involved in karma kanda, and if a brahmana becomes a transcendentalist under the Shankara Advaita system, then if he's actually going to follow that, then he has to take sannyas. So there's not much hope of taking birth in such a family. Whereas the Vaishnavas, they are transcendentalists and they can be married and but they're transcendentalists. Their goal of life is Krishna. So practically this verse refers to, in the modern age, that would mean Vaishnav family, especially those who are born in family of transcendentalists. Previously there were Brahmanas, husband and wife, they were living as transcendentalists. If we see the rishis of yore, they were mostly married, but they were living as transcendentalists. We'll find that many of the rishis who are described in Shastra, they were married, but they were living very austere lives, and definitely their goal of life was transcendental realization. So such a birth, if one is born in such a family, then one's opportunity for self-realization is very high. It might not be in the family of Brahmanas or Vaishyas. It might not happen. So because the atmosphere is pious but not transcendental. The to pursue the ultimate goal of life, which is within the Chatur Varga, that is called Moksha. And the Vaishnavas, especially those following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they aspire to beyond Moksha, Krishna Prema. The other sampradayas, they speak of Moksha, but that's within the Chatur Varga. So, but they define that Moksha as eternal service to Vishnu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went beyond that even, and said that Krishna Vishayak Prem Param Purusharta Jar Age Chuna Tula Chari Purusharta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the real goal of human life is Prem, love with Krishna as the object of that. And in comparison to this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this, Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha are insignificant. So, here it's stated, Tatratam, Krishna states, Tatratam buddhi sangyogam labhate paurvadehikam yatate chatato bhuya sangsidho kurunandana. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. This especially refers to the family of transcendentalists, although it could also refer to the family of ritualistic brahmanas or the vaishyas. Then the next verse, Pura bhyasena tainaiva Priyate hyavashopi saha jignyasur api yogasya shabda brahmati vartate. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles. Priyate hyavashopi saha. That literally means his heart comes under the control of. It means a very strong attraction. Even without seeking them, such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. Then, prayatna dhyatamanas tu yogi sang shuddha kilvishaha aneka janma sang sitas tato yati param gatim. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Srila Prabhupada is, in the purport here of this verse which we read today, he's given the example of Bharat Maharaj, who was born in the family of a Brahmana. Bharat Maharaj was the king of the world, after which the world, when we say the world, it's an English term which Presumably that came up when people in their ignorance thought that the world meant this planet, or just whatever of the planet they knew of. They didn't even know there was a planet. So the world tends to mean this earth, but there are other terms. The universe. So Bharat Maharaj, he was the king of the tract of land which is now known as Bharatavarsha. The present land of Bharata, which is the official name of this country, in Hindi it's the official name, still on the stamps, given Bharata. That is in the Indira Gandhi time, there used to be so many mottos posted all over the place. So from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, India is one. That was one of the mottos. But if we, where's the western border? Now it's at Amritsar. But previously that would go a lot further west. At least at the time of Mahabharata, the Kandahar, which is now in Afghanistan, that was part of the kingdom, the direct kingdom of Yudhishthira, because, Gandhari, she came from there. And then in the Mahabharata war, we find that the troops were coming from that far west and from Cambodge, which is now called Kampuchea in the east. So it's a much bigger Bharata. And Bharata Varsha, the whole Varsha, it's a huge, vast area, much bigger than this little land which is now called Bharata. It's shrinking. What the conception of what means Bharata. So he was a great emperor, Bharat Maharaj. And at some point in time, he left all of these things. He left the kingdom and the family and went to the forest for meditation. What happened to him? He had a tatratam buddhi samyogam moment that he thought, all of a sudden he thought, what is all this nonsense? Kingdom, home, prestige. I'm going to the forest to find Krishna. So he did that, and he became a highly advanced devotee, but he fell down. Brashta yogi. He fell down due to, he had all the world of all things that he could enjoy. He left all that to perform severe austerities to meditate on Krishna. And he became attracted to a little deer cub. So he took birth again. That's for brevity. Srila Prabhupada does not mention that in this purport. He took birth as a deer because he thought of a deer at the time of death. And then again he took birth in a family of brahmanas. But these brahmanas, although his father was a very pious man, he was not a transcendentalist. And the brothers are in this third birth that's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, Jarabharat. His brothers were not even very good people, it seems. They mistreated him and they made fun of him because he behaved as if he was a madman. He didn't want, he thought that in my last life I got, in my life as Bharat Maharaj, I got involved with a deer, so this time I'm not going to get involved with anyone, not anyone or anything. Even though his father was a very pious man, he didn't want to get involved in anything. He just completely cut himself off and acted as if he was a madman with no if someone acts in a way that they have no, as if they have no consciousness of what's going on around them, they're called a madman. So that was what happened to Bharat Maharaj, and eventually in that last birth he took, by his very strong-minded commitment to not have anything to do with this world, to such an extent that he would eat what was ever was given to him. He didn't make any endeavor to get food. So his brothers, they would give him things like, if the rice burned in the pot, they would give that to him, and whatever wasn't nice, they would, but he never complained. He acted as if he was completely foolish. His father made many attempts to try to teach him Vedic mantras, Gayatri mantra. Brahman has to chant Gayatri mantra. He put the string on his body, but he couldn't teach him the mantra. So, but he was Bharat. He was fully conversant with all the essence of all the mantras, but he behaved as if completely dull. So that may happen to anyone, not necessarily leading a pious life. It may happen that in a previous life they had connection with Krishna, and at some point they revive that consciousness. And maybe not only be conscious of Krishna, there are different levels of yogic advancement. And we find in the history of India, especially the land that is now called India, many, many people who at some point they just changed and they became a transcendentalist. They thought, what is this world? What is it all about? There are so many instances that Sridhar Swami, the commentator on Bhagavatam, his wife died when he had a young child, and he thought, well, I have to marry again, otherwise who will look after my child? And as he was thinking like this, he saw a lizard, a baby lizard, just catching a bug and eating it. And he had a transcendental realization. Can you imagine? You see a bug eating a lizard, and that is the impetus for transcendental realization. How did that happen? And he thought, well, by God's arrangement, this little baby lizard got a bug to eat. So by God's arrangement, my child will also get something to eat. And he left. He left the child and took sannyas. And Bilva Mangal Thakur, you all know that narration very well. You've all seen the drama of Bilva Mangal Thakur. How he was born in a Brahmana family, but he was a rascal. Or he was behaving like a rascal. He had no sense. He was attached to a prostitute. So much so that even when his father died, he was so disappointed. His son was just a debauchee. So even when his father died, he had to do the, obviously he had to arrange the rites and this and that for the, but he neglected that because he wanted to go and see his girlfriend. It was more important to him. And it wasn't a very good night. It was a severe storm was going on, and to reach his girlfriend he had to cross the river. So he went out in the severe storm. There was no boat to cross the river, so he saw a log floating. He caught hold of the log and taking hold of the log, he went over the river. Just as he reached the other side, he saw it wasn't a log, it was a dead body, because I think that's illegal now in India, but until recently it was common to put the dead bodies in the river. You used to see them. Someone, if there was no money for their burning, they'd just throw the body, and you'd see the dead body with the... I saw once floating down the Ganga, a dead body with a dog on top of the dead body, eating the intestines as it was floating down. So used to get some good transcendental shiksha by just living in this country, and you see things like that. So then he came to the compound of that prostitute's house, and it was locked. She didn't expect that he'd come tonight. He came every night, but she didn't expect him on such a night. So the compound was locked. But he saw there was a tree hanging over the wall, and from the tree there was a branch hanging down. So he caught hold of that branch and climbed up in the tree and went. But just as he left that branch, he saw it's not a branch, it's a snake hanging down. So then he jumped down out of the tree again, risking his life, and came in soaking wet and said, "I'm here." He said, "How did you come on such a night?" And he said, "Well, I crossed over the river by it was a dead body actually. Then I climbed up the tree, and it was a snake." And she was astonished, and she said that, "If you see, you're so much attached to this body of mine, which is just some bones and pus and blood. If you had such attachment for Krishna, you would be a greatly advanced devotee." And when he heard that, Bilvamanga was just like a lightning bolt hit him. He wasn't hit by a lightning bolt as he was coming over, but the words struck him. He must have heard of Krishna many times. Otherwise, if she said, "If you had attachment for Krishna, then what would it wouldn't mean anything." She didn't teach in the Bhagavad Gita and all this. She just said that. He must have heard of Krishna many times. But when she said that, it just struck him so that his whole life changed on the spot. So he just, then he changed his life. Then he left and he walked to Vrindavan and became famous as a great devotee living in Vrindavan. He suddenly changed. But how could he do that? I don't know where the brothel is in Salem. You can go down tonight and tell all the people go visiting there that, if you had as much attachment for Krishna as you had for these bags of blood and stool and bones, then you'll be a great devotee. You can try. It's one kind of preaching, but it's not so likely that anyone's going to say, "Oh, okay, I'm going to Vrindavan." But it happened with Bilvamanga. How did that happen? It must be because in a previous life he had been an advanced devotee of Krishna. Otherwise you just can't go from being a grossly fallen materialist to a highly advanced transcendentalist. That's unusual, because usually people who are in a previous life an advanced transcendentalist, they don't become fallen in the next life. But they may be. They have some gross desire that they have to fulfill, or maybe they made some offense by which their advancement is blocked for some time. But there comes a point where they think, now I've got to do it. And then they can't think of anything else. It's not everyone. Maybe people come to Krishna consciousness and then they're interested and they come gradually and they take it up, but they're not very convinced, and they're still interested in so many other things. But there are others who just, when they get it, they just take it up very seriously. That means in a previous life they're very serious. But even then, it might be that they're practicing very seriously, and then even in that life they don't make it. Because that's said here, that if after a long time of practice, that long time of practice may be life after life also, in many lives, so generally they will get a better chance to take it up. But they may fall also. There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee against Maya. As long as we're in this world, the attraction may drag us down, even for someone who is advanced, for one who's fully advanced, fully in love of Krishna, they won't fall down. But for anyone else, there's that possibility. Therefore, those who understand the seriousness of Krishna consciousness, they understand, I've been through this so many times, so many lifetimes. Let's get it right this time. Srila Prabhupada often used to say that now you have this opportunity. You can go back to Godhead in this life. You don't have to wait for many, many lifetimes. You can go back to Godhead in this very life, but you have to take it very seriously. And even if one takes it seriously and circumstantially or for whatever reason, one does not complete his course or the full perfection in this life, then he will go on. Krishna will look after him so that he'll make further progress in the next life. So this is rare. Krishna says, you know, even to take birth in such a family. Etadhi durlabhataram. Very rare. Loki janma yadi drisham. To take this kind of, but to have this kind of opportunity, it's very rare. That's considered the best opportunity. People who have faith in Shastra, they think that then how can I make my next life a better life? And there are so many stories. There's this didactic stories. That means educational stories. Moral education. What happens in one life and how you come to the next life. There's a huge body of stories which tells all kinds of complex stories, how people, they become a Rakshasa and they get delivered from that and this and that. But it's all with the understanding of there is a future birth, but with the idea that, well, the idea is to enjoy ourselves in this world. So even if one has knowledge that, or of faith that there is life after death, that doesn't necessarily make one a transcendentalist, just to understand that. You'd think that it should do, but most people, even though they understand, even if they accept that, they don't really accept that this world is full of suffering. They think this is a place for me to enjoy. And then they think how to enjoy not only in this life, but in the next life. And there's the whole body of karma kanda which is meant for that. So if you do some sin, you can do some prayaschitta, do some atonement and get free from that, so it doesn't block you going to the heavenly planets. And it's all calculated that what I'm doing so I can enjoy myself more. When we say enjoy, that's, of course, there's always the, when we talk about Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they all have dharma in their life. So when we say enjoy, it's all according to the rules of dharma. Not that they're careful to operate within that. And they can enjoy very nicely within that. Tetang bhuktva swargaloka vishalam. It's described that they, in swargaloka, they can enjoy tremendously. But it's all ephemeral. And it's all meaningless. And it's not really enjoyment. There are those who come to Vedanta, they understand this. The family of transcendentalists means those who are discussing the Upanishads, which gives the transcendental understanding. This world, there's nothing of any value here. The subject matter of the Upanishads is Brahma, the absolute, the spiritual reality. So Atato Brahma Jignasa, this also refers to studying Vedanta. One should inquire what is the subject. The Vedanta Sutra begins that now we have to, just like the Dharma Sutras begin, Atato Dharma Jignasa. So That's the obvious statement. Now we're going to discuss dharma in the Dharma Sutras. So in the Brahma Sutras, Atato Brahma Jignasa, now we have to discuss Brahma. So that means that's particularly the subject of the Upanishads. So these are the transcendentalists. They're what is the nature of Brahma, the spiritual reality? And that is all summarized here in Bhagavad Gita and elaborated on in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the yogi means, in this context particularly, Krishna is talking about the yogi, one who's interested in transcendentalism, one who's interested not to get born again in this material world. And Krishna will go on to explain just after this. He tells Arjuna to be a yogi. Best to be a yogi. What is that? Tapasvi bhyo diko yogi jnani bhyo pimato dikaha kami bhyascha diko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. He tells Arjuna that better than the tapasvi, the person performing austerities, is a yogi. And generally the yogi and the tapasvi, they're considered synonymous, but it may be that others who are not yogis are also doing tapasya for some material gain. Then, jnani bhyo pimato, the yogi is better than the jnani. So yoga is supposed to be jnana and tapasya. So what's being spoken about here? Kami bhyaschadiko yogi. And better, obviously better than the person who's just interested in working in this world, is the yogi. Tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. Therefore, Arjuna, you should be a yogi. What kind of yogi? Better than a tapasvi, better than a jnani. And then Krishna explains this, the famous verse. Yogi naam api sarvesham madgate na antaratmana shadhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. The real yogi, the best of all yogis. The whole chapter on yoga is finished now. We're talking about going off and doing meditation. But Krishna says, anyway, the best yogi is the one who with full faith in me puts his life in me and worships me. He is the best yogi. So this kind of yogi who I have to get Krishna. Whatever's happened, whatever has gone on in my life previous to this, he sees it as being unreal. And he might appear to be a madman. That is described earlier here in Gita, the transcendentalist and the materialist, they have a completely different outlook. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyang jagarti sanyami yasyang jagarti bhutani sanisha pashyato muneh. Day and night difference. What is like day for the transcendentalist is like night for the materialist. What is night for the materialist is like day for the transcendentalist. The materialist is interested in happy life in this world. A transcendentalist, he's not only not interested in happy life in this world, but he knows there's no such thing. It's just, it's propaganda by Maya. It's the very idea of happy life in this world it's an illusion. And then the materialist thinks, oh, what is this? What is this person? He had all opportunity to enjoy this world, and he's just torturing himself. Just torturing himself. He doesn't realize, you know, he's supposed, life is meant for enjoyment. And why is he doing this? And you're supposed to be responsible and help everyone else to enjoy themselves also. So the outlook is completely different. And The materialist can't understand the transcendentalist. The transcendentalist understands the materialist because he's been there, seen that, done that. And he understands, what does he understand? He understands Nunang Pramata Kurute Vikarma Yad Indriya Pritiya Apinota Nasadhu Manyayata Atmano Yan Asanapi Kleshada Asadeha. Why do the transcendentalist sees that people, they live in this world and even they'll perform sinful activities for the sake of material enjoyment. Not everyone, but their aim is material enjoyment. They don't know that by doing that, they'll have to get born again and they'll have to suffer again. And therefore, this is madness. So, the materialist sees the transcendentalist as mad, and the transcendentalist sees the materialist as mad. But actually, the transcendentalist is right. And you say, well, that's just your opinion. And you're one of those stupid, supposed to be transcendentalists who think they're transcendental, or they're just wasting their life. But it is a fact. That janma mrityu jara vyadhi, this world is full of misery. That is a fact. It is a fact that we are eternal. We do have no actual relationship with this body. This body is temporary. I am not this body. I am eternal. I am meant to be happy. These are facts. But the materialist can't see, can't understand, because he's bewildered by the prospect of material, the thought of material happiness, of being happy in this world. So, it's a completely different outlook. And therefore, for the transcendentalist, his success can be understood if the materialist think he's mad. That evangrata sapriya nama kritya jatanuraga chutta chit uchai hasatyato roditi gayati unmadavan rittati lokabhayaha. This Ishvara Puri taught Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that this verse is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. That when one's feelings for Krishna awaken, then because Krishna is very dear to such a devotee, he loves to chant the names of Krishna. He's fully absorbed in Krishna. He laughs, he cries, he dances. He doesn't care for outside people, what they think. He only cares what Krishna thinks. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also. There are many instances. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also prays for the mercy of his guru. What will be the mercy of his guru will be that Bishoyi amare pagala balaya ongete dibek dhuli. That when my life will be successful, when materialistic people sneer at me, madman, and throw dirt on me, then yes. Not just to be mad, but because one will be so absorbed in love of Krishna that he's just not, doesn't even notice. There are different stages. The Avanti Brahmana is described. He was a very miserly, nasty person, supposed to be a Brahmana, but he was just interested in money and he was very mean. He was never nice to anyone. And then he was very rich, but gradually he lost all his money and all his family members who hated him. But they had to do what he said because he was giving them the money. Then they turned against him because he wasn't giving them money and they didn't have any love. He didn't have any love for them. They didn't have any love for him, and they became nasty to him reciprocally. But previously he had also, in a previous life, he had also executed bhakti. Somehow he had this very nasty streak in him. But at that point, then his Krishna consciousness that revived in his heart. Yes, aham anugrihnami harishe tadanang shanai. Tato dhanang tyajantyasya swajana dukha dukitam. Krishna says, when I show my mercy to someone, I take away all their money. Gradually. And then when his relatives see he hasn't got any money left, then they become, the love, it reduces in tandem with the income. His relatives become unhappy with him. So then he realized, Krishna, yeah, I have to serve Krishna. So then he left home and his relatives were pleased to see him go, and he was just meditating on Krishna and leading a very austere life, and people would call him a madman and they'd mistreat him. And even if he would get some food, he would sit down to eat, someone might come and urinate in the food. I just tolerate. Let them call me mad. Let them think me mad. But a higher level than that, even, is not just to be aware that people are calling you mad and tolerating it, but being so mad that you're not even aware that they're calling you mad and throwing mud on you and everything else. So that is the desirable stage. Of course, Krishna is speaking here to Arjuna, and Arjuna, he tells Arjuna, Ma Manusma, Arjuna, okay, that's all right, think of me, yeah, I'm okay with that. And Yudhyacha, you have to fight also. So for Arjuna, that wasn't allowed by Krishna to become a madman in that sense. There are also the examples there of this Kulashekhar Alva here. What's his name in Tamil, you can say? You don't know? I thought you might know. Same name. Sanskrit and Tamil, same name. All right. So he also, he became so mad that he had to stop being the king, because to be a king you have to be sane. He became so mad, he was disrupting the affairs of the kingdom, that he would listen to Ram Leela, and he'd hear the monkeys are all going to attack Lanka, and then he'd order all his chiefs around him, okay, call the troops, let's go to Lanka, we have to assist Rama in his fight. And ministers, they're wondering what to do, you know. You're going to get an army and start marching, and the king in the next kingdom is going to think we're attacking him. It's a political disaster when the king goes mad. It happened from time to time in Europe. Some of the English kings, they were mad, and they just had to manage them. I mean, really mad. They just had to manage them and hope that the next one was better. That's all they could do. So one of the qualities of a Vaishnava, which Krishna mentions, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions, is apramatta. He's sane. So generally he acts sanely. And Rupa Goswami also, in the rules which he gives for Vaishnavas, he says that he's not neglectful in worldly dealings. So although a devotee is beyond dharma, artha, kama, moksha, he also generally, in most cases, they will act in this world in a sane, in a manner which is not overly disturbing to the social order. For people in general, especially for impious people, even to see anyone chanting Hare Krishna is a disturbance. They don't like that. But for moderately pious people, as long as you chant Hare, you can chant Hare Krishna, but just do everything else also. So devotees, they often we ask this question, how to keep the balance? There is no balance, actually. The balance is that Hazatyati, Rodati, Gayati, we should dance and sing and chant and be completely unaware of this world. That's the... But as long as we're living in this world, we have to interact with it. And if we're going to preach Krishna consciousness, we have to communicate with people. So there's some rapport has to be there. So if we go on the street in rags or completely naked and say, Chant Hare Krishna! And it's not likely to be very successful preaching technique. Which is why our recent acharyas, well, beginning with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he built temples and had comfortable facilities so that people could come and hear him. Because Krishna consciousness awakens by hearing. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Shada Kabunai, Shravana Adi, Shuddha Chitte Koryeudai. Krishna consciousness is the natural propensity of everyone, and that is awakened by hearing. Beginning with hearing. So one has to hear from the Vaishnavas. In some cases, people will just take it like that. Yeah, that's it. I've got to do it. For others, they may not be interested at all. For others, they're somewhat interested. All right. Okay. Sounds good. All right. For others, they may not have very much interest, but they might be attracted if they see there's a nice temple, there's nice prasadam, or they're pious people. I think, let us go to the temple and we will see the God. We will take darshan, we'll get blessings. They're in materialistic consciousness, but they're pious and they come and then sit down, listen, hear something. So when they hear, then the effect of hearing that is eventually vidyate hridaya grantis chidyante sara sangshayaha. The material attachments which are very strong in their heart, they will be pierced, and all doubts and misgivings, they will be cut to pieces. So that's especially regular hearing. By regularly hearing, that effect will be there. So our acharyas, recent acharyas, they've had this idea. All right, then interact with the world. Some rapport has to be set up, so that people can come and they can hear, and they can begin to understand. And then they start to make progress. And when they start to make progress, some people may come, they may take interest, they may not fully progress. In the next life they take it up, in the next life, and it may go on and on and on like this. But an intelligent person thinks, let's do it in this life. Why should I wait any longer? In the womb that's described, someone who has practice bhakti seriously in a previous life, in the womb, after 7 months, their consciousness is awakened and they pray to Krishna that let me this time not blow it, let me not waste this opportunity, let me this time do whatever is required to come to your lotus feet. But then during childbirth, the pain, they forget all of that, and then they get brought up in the family and they're bewildered by the illusion of being a baby and being patted and petted. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described this in one song that I was in the womb of the mother, I prayed to you, Krishna. Then I came out, I forgot all about it, and I was patted and then on the head, and I was an adored child, and then I was playing as a boy, and then I got married, and I was interested in money and all this. How does that song? I'd like to read that, but I can't remember how it begins. Did anyone remember how does that song begin? It's several songs he sings. One he begins, but anyway, they all come to the conclusion that one begins with in my youth. Jovane Jokon. So he describes how he went through his whole life forgetting Krishna, but at the end he's just, now in my old age I'm praying to you, Krishna, please deliver me. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his life was something like that. After his marriage, after having, of course he was married very young, child marriage, But he appeared to be a non-devotee. Then at some point in time, he was inquisitive. As were many in that generation. They were raised in Bengal with their family culture is there, but they went to British schools and they had these two outlooks. They had the modern British outlook, and at the same time they had their own culture, and different people were trying to resolve that, because the British gave the idea that this Indian way of, it's all completely rubbish, and the British understanding, that's much better. But many young Indians who were educated like that, they did think that the Hinduism as they saw it was rubbish, because it didn't seem to be rational to them, but they tried to rationalize it and say, well, the original Hinduism was very good, or they tried to modernize it, and therefore you got Vivekananda and Ram Mohan Rai and all these people. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he went through the same thing, and he discovered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he read, that was his thunderbolt. When he read Chaitanya Charitamrita, which he had no interest in doing in his youth, because he thought this was all Vaishnava, Chaitanya, whatever. But then when he read that, then that was the complete change in his life. But he's writing in his song, he went through his whole life, he forgot Krishna, now in his old age, he's praying for Krishna's mercy to deliver him. So that's we can understand someone who takes interest in Krishna consciousness. Not everyone who is exposed to it, but some people, they take it up very seriously when they come in contact with that. So it means from a previous life they had that, and then they went through this whole thing of being born in the womb, and they're praying in the womb, and then they forget, and then there comes a point when they remember. It may be also that one is not born in a pious family, but still, by Krishna's arrangement, an advanced transcendentalist may be born in a family of non-devotees. Prahlad, he is the great example. He was born in the family of the greatest asura, the greatest demon in history. There's still, after so many eons, there's still no competitor. Well, Ravana, but then that was Hiranyakashipu anyway. So he's only comparable with himself. Ananya, as the saying goes, unique. So there's no comparison, but Prahlad was such, and the devotees, they may be born in all kinds of families and situations. Vyas was born from the womb of a fisherwoman, but from the semen of Parashara, and someone is born from a clump of grass, and from a rabbit, and all different examples are given. But generally, someone will be born in a family of pious people, and generally their inclination they can take up Krishna consciousness more easily, which is why we find in India that we're preaching the same message, or we're supposed to be preaching the same message in India as everywhere else in the world, but in India, people take it more seriously, especially those who are from Hindu families, because they have exposure to this culture. Exposure, to, even if it's messed up, and they're exposed to Sai Baba, and what is Hinduism today? It's just a complete mess. But there's still some idea. Some idea is coming through. So they're more likely to take that up. But it may be anywhere also, anywhere in the world. There was one anecdote of in Vrindavan, two of Srila Prabhupada's sannyasis. They were at the Radharaman temple, and one priest there, appreciating the devotee, the Western devotee's appreciation of Sri Radharaman, he said to them, "Oh, you have so much devotion for Krishna that in your next life you may be born as a pujari in India and you can worship the Lord." He said, "In your next life you might be as fortunate as me," he was saying. So the devotees, they went back to Krishna Balaram temple, which was under construction at the time, and met Srila Prabhupada, who was there, and related this to them, that this pujari gave us a blessing. In our next life, we could be born in a Brahmin family in India so that we could worship Krishna in India. Srila Prabhupada said, "You should go back and tell that Brahmana that by your devotion in this life to Radharaman, you may be fortunate enough that you'll be born in the Western countries and you can preach Krishna consciousness all over the world." But it's not that everyone's born in the Western countries gets to preach. So, but we can understand that those who take it up seriously, there must have been something in the previous life. But then if you think, "Well, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, so I must have done it in my previous life, or I'm a Brahmana, so I must have," and then you're satisfied that then you're again stuck. One has to go on endeavoring. One has to follow it through. Otherwise, you could get stuck at the same level for many lives. And every life you think, "Oh yes, in Bhagavad Gita it says, I was a great devotee in my previous life." And the astrologer also said, if you go to the astrologer, he'll tell you, he'll tell a devotee that they're a great devotee in their every one of them. They all say. And most people, if they go to the astrologer, they'll say, "In your last life you were a king," or they're never any ordinary person. They always tell you, "You were some great personality." I'm somewhat doubtful of this, because it's like they're flattering them. So you could get stuck like that, thinking, "Oh yeah, in my previous life. So, oh yeah, okay, so yeah. I must be, that proves I'm a great devotee." It doesn't prove you're a great devotee, it proves you're a damn fool who got the opportunity and blew it in the previous life. And if you're thinking like that in this life, then again we have the full opportunity, but again become foolish if we don't take it fully. So complacency is the enemy of progress. There are many enemies of progress. One of them is complacency in any situation. If you're in business, if your company is doing very well, and you think, "Okay, now we're on top of the market and we're doing very well," and a company that doesn't constantly reinvent itself, according to the Microsoft, they fail. And there are many cases in recent history. This Yahoo, everyone was using Yahoo, and then it just went down. Because they thought, "Okay, we've cornered so much of the market," and then, but they lost it. They weren't inventive. They didn't keep it. Nokia, their phones were dominating, and they went down also. So it's, you have to keep on trying. Maya doesn't say, "Okay, bye-bye." She doesn't. She keeps on. So if we think, "Yes, now I'm doing very well." If we think that, that means we're automatically not doing well. Just by thinking that, that means we're in trouble. So always endeavoring. Always endeavor in Krishna consciousness. And don't think, "Now I made it." It's always the example of Bharat Maharaj is there. He was so renounced. He was so determined. He left everything, but somehow he became attracted to a deer. The Srila Prabhupada mentions that because he didn't take guidance, from a guru. He probably had a guru somewhere, but there's no mention of that. So he was practicing Krishna consciousness, but he didn't take guidance. And so he was subject to fall down, because there's no mention in the life of Jarabharat that he took guidance there either, specifically. So, here we all are. We're not going to be here very long. Few more days. Udilo arana pura babha. The sun has risen. It will set. Udita tapana hoile asta dingelo bale hoibe asta tabe keno ebe ola shahai nabhoja hridaya raja. The sun rises, it sets. Every day rises, it sets. We're not serious to worship Krishna. Sun rises, sun sets, but there will come very soon for all of us, there will come one sunrise after which through these eyes we won't see the sunset. Or there'll be one sunset after which with these eyes we won't see the sunset. That means we'll die either in the day or the night. So it's coming for everyone. So where are we going to go? It's all Krishna's mercy, but Krishna gives us the opportunity to act in such a way that we can get His mercy fully. We're all getting Krishna's mercy. Someone gets Krishna's mercy to become a worm in stool. That's Krishna's mercy on them. Someone gets Krishna's mercy to merge into impersonal Brahma. Someone gets Krishna's mercy to be born in a family of transcendentalists. Someone gets Krishna's mercy that they're born in Krishna's Leela. And then there's no endeavor. At that point, there's no more endeavoring to become self-realized or any such thing. That's it. That's back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Oh, it's 9:30 almost. So any question about this? Yes. They've come to Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Sai Baba. Something like that? You're going to say, I've heard this one before. Because of my previous activity. Yeah, but if you think like that, then... I was a great devotee in my previous life, and therefore I'm a great devotee in this life. Someone who thinks like that is not really on the path of bhakti at all. Yeah, it's... Guruji, can you give me initiation? I'd just like to present myself. Out of my mercy, I'm offering myself to you. You can have the great good fortune of being my guru. One who thinks like this, they're not in bhakti at all. For them, bahu janma kare jadi shravan kirtan tabuta na pai Krishna pade prematan. We could go on life after life thinking we're in bhakti, and we're not. Because if we think that I'm doing bhakti, by my strength of my bhakti I'm making advancement, then we're not in bhakti at all. Bhakti means to understand that we're fully dependent on the mercy of Krishna and the devotees. That's without that, that's not bhakti. Here in your South India, prapati. Prapati doesn't mean, okay Krishna, I'm here, what are you going to do? It means to take full shelter, realizing I'm completely hopeless and helpless. But if we think, I'm by the strength of my bhakti, I'm doing so many things. I'm building temples, I'm making devotees, I'm distributing books, I'm chanting so many rounds, it's all the strength of my bhakti. It's not bhakti. You can build temples, but such temples will have no spiritual attraction because there's no bhakti in the bricks. What is bhakti? Bhakti means the spirit of that I just described, that of thinking that I'm completely insignificant, I'm completely dependent on Krishna's mercy. That's the beginning. That's the beginning. Prapatti. To be completely dependent. To understand I'm very small, I have no personal ability. I'm simply dependent on the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnava. That's the beginning. That's the entrance. And without that, there is no actual bhakti. There can be what's called karma mishra bhakti or jnana mishra bhakti. But that's not really bhakti. If one is cultivating a spirit different to that of being fully dependent on Krishna's mercy, then that's not really bhakti at all, if one has any other desire. Therefore, Rupa Goswami defines, anyabhila ashita shunyam jnana kamadhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutama. Real bhakti means when we're not cultivating any other desire, we have no personal desire, neither material, or gross material, or intellectual, or even spiritual, that I want to get liberation. Even thinking like that means there's some, it's not completely pure. As long as we identify any interest separate from that of serving Krishna without any personal motivation, is not full bhakti. Heavy, isn't it? When we realize what is required. It's a very sobering consideration. What does it mean, bhakti? Vihaya kaman yasaravan pumangs charati nispriha. Giving up all personal desires, living without any desires. Nirmamo nirahankar. No sense of mine, no sense of I'm very important. Even in bhakti, if we think I'm very important. Nirmamo nirahankar. So shanti madigachati, and then you get shanti. That's the beginning. You just get some peace of mind. Bhakti, that's even further ahead. That's the spiritual position. Esha brahmi sthiti partha nainang prapya vimuhyati stitvasya mantakale pi brahmanirvanam richati. That's the beginning of the spiritual situation. That's not it. When one has no personal desire, that's the basis. And then one becomes eligible for, if one remains situated, then one is eligible for liberation. But bhakti is more developed. It's not just being free from material desire, but it means being full of desire for Krishna. Full of desire to serve Krishna. So fortunately, by the bhakti process, it's so powerful that by cultivating that material desires, they automatically diminish. So we don't have to go through some, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. We don't have to go through any severe austerities or self-denial or any such thing. Living entities can't live without desires, that's true. Yeah, true.
But if you're changing of desires as per a Krishna consciousness thing, Krishna is saying that you have to think about me wherever you are. In Grahasabra, Brahmacharya, wherever you can think about me. This is the only thing, is this enough to show our bhakti, the real bhakti to God?
Is it enough to show real bhakti to God, to think of Him? Think and serve and chant His names, yeah. But the basis will be thinking of Him. If we're not thinking of Him, then why would we want to chant His names or serve Him? Just to think, well, if one's actually thinking of Him, then one has to serve Him. Thinking of Krishna means favorably. Anukul, that word, anukul, what is that? Anushilan, what is that? Krishna Anushilanam. Cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably. We can think of Krishna. Kamsa was also thinking of Krishna. No, that's not bhakti. So, thinking of Krishna, understanding that I'm His servant, and then if you're a servant, then you have to serve. And that will come automatically, because that is the natural position of the living being. Then naturally one will want to chant the name of Krishna. One will want to decorate the deity of Krishna. One will want to associate with devotees of Krishna. It comes automatically. That will be there. If bhakti is there, then it won't be just passive. It will be active. There are so many things to do in Krishna's service. You serving prasadam this morning? Okay, well, I guess one of them is to honor prasadam also. So, you could all go for that. Alright, we'll leave it there then. Hare Krishna! Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Bhagavad Gita as it is ki jai! Hare Krishna!